Glad you're here this morning. A couple of serious questions. I'll say a little more in regard to comments. Give me just a second, please. Technology, it's always perfect, right? Well, say what? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Speaking of technology, I don't know what's going on with this thing, so give me just a moment. Somebody else's technology is going off too. Well, that's the weirdest thing. Forgive me for a moment. I don't know what's going on here. I've got my phone if need be. But anyway, I wanted to say thank you sincerely before we get started this morning for all those who came out to Dad's celebration, otherwise known as funeral. But we appreciate, I know it was a long trip, we appreciate all your thoughts and cards and especially your prayers. They've meant a lot to us. And so thank you for that. And our prayers, of course, are with you. I'm glad to hear that there is an evangelism program that you guys are starting. Anybody want to share details, or do you have many details yet about that program, or when it's supposed to start?
We had a soft start Wednesday after our class, and we're going to start Thursday. So we're going to start Thursday. So we handed out cards to people,
Good. What's the overall plan? Just outreach? I mean, some people do door knocking. Some people try to set up Bible studies, or just is there any specifics to it? Waiting to see? Okay, you didn't know I was going to start asking you questions. Well, I've got two questions specifically to ask this morning because I've heard them recently. I'm privileged to work not as in any specific special role or as a paid minister, but I go to Morganton, North Carolina twice a month. And I was going to fill in. They don't have a regular preacher, so it's me and another guy, a couple of guys that fill in the rotation, and small congregation. Used to be, I want to say, 170. Now probably 25 to 30. And I was showing up and teaching classes and preaching lessons and trying to, you know, educate and do that. But then I thought, I'm not really helping these brethren. And I just, on the drive, it's about an hour and a half drive one way, on the drive one morning over the mountain, I thought, I need to do something to try and challenge and help. And I thought I would sort of do the same thing here, just, of course, on this limited basis. And I'm glad to hear about you guys talking about evangelism. What is evangelism? We say that word all the time, only in these circles, but what is it? Yeah, teaching the gospel. Sometimes we complicate it. Sometimes we make it more difficult than it has to be. But I'm glad to hear that you guys are thinking that, because the question, one of the questions I had to ask is, where is the Pulaski Church of Christ in 20 years? If you had to think 20 years down the road, where is this congregation? Is it stronger? Is it more vital? Is it dead? Does it cease to exist? It's a lot to think on. Again, I know I showed up with questions that you weren't prepared for. You just wanted me to start talking, right? Not start prying. The other question is this. If this congregation ceased to exist, would the community know it? Would Pulaski know that we weren't here anymore? I say we. I know that I'm not an everyday part of the congregation here, but we're all part of the kingdom. And if this is no longer here, this no longer happens, does the community know? I'm not asking you to answer those. I mean that more rhetorically, because it causes us to think about what we're doing. When people talk about church growth, a lot of things come to mind. A lot of people, not most necessarily, but a lot of people think about church growth in terms of numbers. And probably all of us to some degree figure if we fill up all the pews Everything will be perfect and better, right? And it would be good, right? Because if we filled up the pews, what does that mean? Yeah, it means we're getting the message out. There's no specific answer I'm looking for here. What does it mean if these pews are all filled up? A bunch of people have obeyed the gospel, right? There's a bunch of people who've had their eternity changed. That would be great. So it's more than that. It also means there's more opinions too. So it doesn't necessarily fix, but the point is to reach out, and then you start to ask, how much like Jesus do we look? Do we look like him? Are we on his mission? Because what's easy to happen in church is just to come here, do the things, go home, and do our regular stuff, right? That's easy to do. It happens. I'm not degrading, nor am I wanting to talk about the bygone days, about how things used to be. What this congregation at its peak was how many? Mom and I were talking about this on the way here. I think when we were here in the 80s and early 90s, probably 70, 80, something like that. May have been more before that. I'm not sure. I don't want to talk about the bygone days. That's easy to do too. Well, back in the day, we used to... Well, you talk like that and it sounds hopeless, doesn't it? Well, I don't know what happened. Well, there's lots of things that contribute to that. Nor do I want to talk about what all we don't have and what all we wish we had and wish we were and wish would happen and so forth, because that doesn't really get you anywhere. Those are past conversations. Now, can you learn from the past? Certainly. Should you live in it? No. The future you can plan for. The present is what I'm most interested in. When you play a sport like basketball, a great coach... My son had a great coach for a year in high school. A great coach will teach you that you cannot live in what might happen or what just happened. You have to be present, because a sport like that moves very quickly. You are offense and defense back and forth, and you could make a shot and be really happy about it and forget to play defense, and then you've given up to the other team. Or you could miss a shot and be thinking about it and be scared to death and affect the rest. So the idea is to be present. And that's what I wanted to talk about for a few moments and try to get you engaged this morning to talk about it and have honest conversation. If I was going to talk about church growth in the past, I probably would have gone to a lot of different scriptures. You certainly could go to a variety of places like Acts to see how the New Testament church began and developed, and we can learn lessons from there. Perhaps a problem with a discussion like that is that we start to talk in groupthink. What do I mean by that? Groupthink is when we all talk about what we should be doing, what we should, and what's everybody's job is nobody's job, right? You ever heard that before? Well, somebody should, if you do that at work and you have a meeting and you say somebody should clean the bathroom, who's somebody? Nobody. Nobody's going to volunteer for that job, right? So if we just think in group terms, we should do this, we should do that. I hear this a lot. I hear this, for example, with a Bible camp I work with. And I have people come to me all the time with ideas. You know what? We should yada, yada, yada. And my response to that is, all right, get that started. And they, we should. Well, you start it. We should do that. It's a good idea, but it's got to start with somebody. So whatever we talk about, we need to do, has to start with me. Has to start with you. Because everybody's not going to do what I won't do myself. And we are not going to accomplish what I'm not willing to invest in. Does that make sense? I know I'm sort of speaking and kind of jumping around here. So do you have any thoughts about those statements or questions so far? Have you thought about it for a minute? Where will this congregation be in 20 years? 2046. Some of you won't be here, will you? No, Mom doesn't plan to be. Hopefully, prayerfully, you'd be in a much better place where church just is. Church is the gathering, by the way, or the gathered together is one of the meanings behind the word in the New Testament. And in paradise, that's exactly what we'll be. Any thoughts, though, where this congregation will be? Here's one aspect. How many young people do we have in here today? How many young families do we have? Now, again, I'm not degrading. I'm not throwing stones. None of those things. When you see and talk about these things, it just says, okay, we have some things to work on, don't we? We have it. That's why I'm glad to hear about this outreach or evangelism or whatever we want to talk about a program, is because we want people to obey the gospel. That's Jesus' mission. He came here, as he said in Luke 19:10, to seek and save the lost. That's paramount. Now, if I take that to heart, and I can't save the world all at one time, but if I take that to heart and start having conversations with people, or we maybe as a big group or smaller groups within start taking that to heart and teaching people and having conversations. We use the phrase Bible study a lot. And that phrase is okay. But sometimes Bible study sounds formulaic or sounds formal. Did Jesus walk up to the woman at the well in John 4 and have a Bible study with her? What did he do? Had a conversation. Just had a conversation. And I learned a lesson a long time ago. How many in here have heard of Amway? You know, okay, you heard of Amway? I fell for that once when I was younger. And then I became the Amway magnet. Because apparently back then, maybe still now, if you wear a tie and you're young and you're out at Walmart, these guys just know how to find you. And it was interesting to me that within 10 minutes of somebody asking me what time it was or what I do for a living, in 10 minutes they could have me or me listening to them talk about wanting to go into business with them. And I thought, man, if they can do that about Amway, couldn't I do the same thing about Jesus? Maybe a little bit more uncomfortable, but that's exactly what we're called to do, is go out and teach. So, any thoughts at all? Because I'm dominating this conversation, which is not much of a conversation yet.
I want to give an example of something that happened here. It's time to think. We came here in 87, and I had been to the legacy, and I'm not promoting any stats, but I just want to remind those who are here again what happened. I was telling her about it, and Lady said that I went to, and Martha said, "Why can't we do that here?" And in 6 weeks, we put together a plan, but it took just one or two people to say, "Why can't we do that?" Our first Lady stage, we had over 100 people here. It wasn't done then. You didn't hear of it then, so did you hear about it now? My point is, just what you said, sometimes it just takes that one person, maybe two people, to say, "Let's do something." I didn't do it. It was the ladies here that came together and made that happen. It was successful for several years after that. My point is, it can be done, and other things can be done in the same way. You can have the idea and then just run with it. You don't have to do it all, but the idea and presenting it to probably just like the evangelism program that's going on here now. Somebody had to say, "Let's do it." We're small in number now. It's not like it used to be. But still, you can reach out. And it has to be two. It has to be a me that's not necessarily a group. I just gave an example of a group. But it started with a me, one person saying, "We can do something. We can do something that's great. I can do something. I can send a car. I can tell them somebody." I can't tell you the lessons that I have about cars. With each one, I mean, it's been overwhelming. But there's so much we can do individually and group wise. Don't think in terms of being small.
Other thoughts? I see how you're going to do me this morning. All right, you're going to challenge me like I can't talk the whole time. I get it. I understand it. Yeah, starting, taking out of that, a ladies' day is something within, and cards sometimes are something within, but the point still stands. It starts with somebody. It doesn't have to be a massive group either. It can be, I'm going to get together with somebody, and we're going to pray about this, and I'm going to go have a conversation with so-and-so. Everybody in here knows somebody who is familiar with God, is familiar with the Bible, is not a Christian, or is not a part of the New Testament church, and you know that there's a conversation can be had there. I am, this is opinion, so you can take this or leave this. I am a warm contact fan. What I mean by that is I'm not a fan of cold contacts. I don't want anybody coming to my door off the cuff on a Saturday morning knocking and saying, would you like to talk about Jesus? You know, whether it's a Jehovah's Witness or a Mormon or whatever else, I'm not a fan of that personally. And that's not going to work with me. But I do know what I mean. That's a cold contact. A warm contact is somebody I already know, have a rapport with, a relationship with. And everybody in here has people like that, that we can talk to about Jesus. And so there's a lot of different ways this class could go this morning. Probably before I started working with Morganton on this, the last place I thought about going was Romans chapter 12, but that's where I want to end up, or actually go right now, if you don't mind. Romans chapter 12, and it starts personally, and I have to be committed to God, not necessarily His church. That comes, I mean, that's a part of the equation. But my commitment first has to be to God, and there has to be an appreciation of my salvation and a willingness to tell somebody else about it, and the ability to overcome the fears. It's difficult. Let's just be straight and honest. To have a conversation about the Lord, there are some fears involved. What are some of the fears? Why is it so difficult to talk to people about the Lord or about the Bible or the truth? Rejection. Okay, that's one of the fears. Good. That's a big one. Okay, I won't know the answer to the question. That's a big one. Those are probably the two biggest ones, wouldn't you say? Rejection, I'll be in whatever way, shape, or form, and then I won't know the answers. And what are the replies to that? Well, you can go read Matthew 10, where Jesus talks about and sending out His, as we call it, the limited commission, and He sends His disciples out to the Jews and tells them that they are going to meet rejection, and here's how you handle it, and here's what you should be concerned about and not concerned about. And that's that famous passage that we often go to about confession, where He says, if you confess me before men, I'll confess you before the Father. If you deny me, I'll deny you. That's talking to those disciples about going out and being bold. And being bold doesn't mean necessarily being audacious. It doesn't mean being offensive, or it just means being honest and being real about who we are and how much we care about these individuals and what they don't have and the offer that's available to them. So there's that, and then there's not knowing. Every one of us, me included, every one of us should be better equipped with this Bible. That's just the truth of it. We have one book for a lifetime to learn, and we don't know it as well as we should. Well, and nothing I can do about that in the past, but I can be more committed now, because what's relying on my knowledge and who's relying on my knowledge is not just me now. It's my family members, my blood kin that are relying on it. It's people that I know that need the truth are relying on my knowledge. And then there's the simple fact that you're not going to know all the answers all the time. True or false? Just not. There are going to be times where you're stumped. It happens. No shame in that. And let me give you a hint. It's great to say, I don't know. I have the resource. I trust the resource, but I don't know the answer to that yet. As one man told me years ago, saying you don't know today, it's not a shame. Not knowing tomorrow is a shame. I thought, that You can live by that. So there are answers to these, but they're real fears that we're going to have to face. Now, all of us evangelists, no. If you've ever been to go visit somebody or go sit down and talk Bible with somebody, sometimes you're the co-pilot. Anybody, I'm not asking you to raise your hands. Anybody ever been the co-pilot? What I mean by that is I've gone and there's somebody who's going to have the study, if you will, have the conversation, discuss Bible. You know what I turned into? Babysitter. You know why? So that they could talk Bible. So I went and played with the kids. There are all kinds of ways. Some of us, as you'll read here, in fact, let's go to Romans 12 in verse 3 because it talks about gifts. He says, and I'm in the New King James, "For I say through the grace given to me, to everyone who is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly as God has dealt to each one a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all the members don't have the same function." Now he's talking about a physical body. Your hands don't have the same function as your feet, your eyes, your ears, and so forth. "So we being many," in verse 5, "are one body in Christ and individually members of one another." So we need each other. See, this is where this group aspect starts to come in, but he's still talking individual gifts here. In verse 6, "having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us." Now, did he say anything about value there? Did he say that these gifts are more valuable than these gifts? Or did he just say they're different? Different. That's all. So they're different, but they are used, and when used properly together, they're even more effective. He said, "Let us use them if prophecy." Now, this is an old one that happened when the Bible was still being revealed and people were prophetic and being revealing information through the Holy Spirit from God. And so they would prophesy. They would reveal information. If you wanted to, and I'm not necessarily drawing a parallel here, but if you wanted to talk about a gift, some people are good with knowing the Word much better than others, right? Have you seen those people? They can just recall. They know where things are. They may not even have things memorized, but they're better with knowing the Word. So he says, "Let us prophesy in proportion to our faith, or ministry, let us use it in ministering." Some of us are servants. You know these people, right? They just know how to serve. They look in situations and lives and they see the needs and they know how to fill it. Or they know how to put people in place to fill those needs. Some of us are teachers. He who teaches in teaching. James himself said, I believe in chapter 3 and verse 1, "Let not many of you be teachers." So not everybody is a teacher. Not everybody can sit down and have these. So maybe if you have these fears about sitting down and having a discussion, you may not be fit for that. Now, we all can't take that avenue, can we? And just say, "Well, I'm scared, so I must not be a teacher." No, some of us are better equipped and just have to get over our fears. He who exhorts in exhortation. What does it mean to exhort? We don't talk like that today. Give me another word. Encourage. What was said over here? Yeah, to encourage, to encourage others to excel. So in exhorting somebody, be that encourager. You know these people, don't you? You feel better when you're around those people. And they don't always just, you know, pump you up. Some of them challenge you. And they challenge you in a way that encourages you to do better. They make you want to be a better Christian, a better follower of God. So you might be that person. He who gives with liberality. Some of us are just better givers than others. For whatever reason, you're not as stingy. You want to just give everything away, and that means your time or your resources or your energy. So do so liberally, if you will. He who leads with diligence. Now, this can be elders or shepherds or deacons in the flock, but not everybody has to have a title who has good leadership skills. Are there women with good leadership skills? Yeah, I would say there are that can lead in their certain ways that God has aligned for them, especially amongst the women themselves. But so there are different people with leadership qualities as well. Do so with diligence. And there are people who are merciful. He who shows mercy with cheerfulness. This list is not exhaustive, but it gives you a good understanding of having your own personal gift from God, blessing from God, and how are you going to use that in the group to help with the mission of the church. What is the mission of the church? You can't answer all the questions. What is the mission of the church? Yeah, she said it. But to spread the word. Jesus came here, established a mission, and we hear Matthew 28, 19 through 20, and that we call that the Great Commission, right? So what he did is he set up a mission, a goal, a way of life, an avenue of service, and he said, okay, I started this, I'm leaving, here you go. And we have to ask, how is the church, how is our congregation doing with this? How am I doing with this? And it has to be personal before it's ever collective. Any thoughts or questions? We're backing into some of this. Verses 1 and 2 of Romans 12, familiar passage. I beseech you therefore, I beg you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that means that's your motivation, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, wholly acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. This is the most reasonable way to live. A living sacrifice means you become, in certain words, a victim for God. So what if you're ridiculed? So what if you're rejected? What if your life is made more difficult? You're made uncomfortable and all the things we could add in there, right? Well, that gives you the opportunity to be a victim for Christ. And isn't that what he came here and did for us? Absolutely. So that we familiarize ourselves with him and we model ourselves after him. And then he says in verse 2, do not be conformed to this world. Have you noticed, I'm using the word in the bigger sense now, some would say Christendom. When I say, have you noticed that church has been changing to meet the world? And I don't know how long, it's been going on for a while, it's not just a new thing. But church has been changing to meet the world. We need to change our music so that the world will like us more. We need to give things away so that the world will like us more. We need to be theatrical so that people will enjoy more. And it happens also in the church. We need a better preacher so we're entertained more. Not if he gives good lessons, good, solid, foundational, biblical lessons, but does he entertain me? Does he hold my attention? Well, he's talking about a book that should hold all of our attention if he's referencing that book. So you see how this happens. He says, don't be conformed to this world. Some people have given up to the idol of numbers and popularity. Sometimes that's the idol of money. This church ain't going to make it if we don't have more money, so we need to bring in more people that have money so we can keep going. What? There's just some backward thinking sometimes, and we're talking about being transformed. How are you transformed? Look at Romans 12 and verse 2. How are, everybody but mom, how are you transformed? I'm picking on her. I'll pay for it on the ride home. Yeah. Yes. 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 Yeah. I told you you're not allowed to answer. You want to do it anyway. Yeah. Give them a moment. How are you transformed? I'm coming back to your comment. How are you transformed in Romans 12 and verse 2? By the... Thank you. I know it's scary, isn't it? You could ask a Sunday morning Bible class, who is God's son? And people go, is this a trick question? By the renewing of your mind. How do you renew your mind? There you go. Right here. This is the resource. Renew your mind in God's Word. That way you may prove, as it says, what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. So that you, not only can you understand it, but you can show it. Peter said in 1 Peter 3, what is it there? Is it 21 or is it 15? Be ready to give. What's that? I think it is 15. Be ready with a defense or an answer for those who ask you about the hope that you have in you. Let me say this too, church. They're not going to ask us about the hope that lies within us if we're all pessimistic about the future. You know what I mean? I'm really running on E with brethren who are so pessimistic about the future. Oh, I can't believe that. Well, the world's going to, and this, we're the only people in the world who know the future. And for the righteous, what's the future? Heaven! That Jesus wins, God wins, and we win. What do we have to be down in the mouth about? Oh, the world is there, and I can't believe this. Well, believe it. This is Satan's dwelling place. This is his domain. He's ruined it. Stop being shocked about it and stop acting like everything's falling apart. We have to, the world needs to see hope in us. They need a reason to ask, how do you deal with this so well? How do you not just fall apart with X, Y, and Z? You see what I'm saying? Now, it was mentioned, Mark mentioned a few moments ago about this, how it starts with like this fire, this spark that's actually coming up in the latter part. I'm done in 5 minutes, is that right? 10:45? Sorry, Morganton starts at 9:30. Places start at different times. I'll never know what time. I just figure somebody will throw something at me when I'm supposed to be done. But he talked about this spark. Some people are that. Some people are a spark. And they use it in so many other places. At work, they're a spark. And for their job or this, that, or in the family. Well, use it with us, with brethren. And so take it personally. Find out what your gift is. And then use that. Figure out how you can use it. Not just for your brethren. We start there. But then for people outside. What are we going to do for this community? What needs are we going to meet? And there are things that have been good in the past, but they're sort of passive gifts to the community. Is it good to have a pantry? Sure, but we usually have a pantry in case somebody calls us for help. That doesn't happen a whole lot, does it? What difference would it make if we went out to those people and found the people who were in need and didn't necessarily ask? Because that's how Jesus did, right? Why did he feed the 5,000? Because they were hungry? You can't answer. I'm going to get it later. Why did Jesus feed the 5,000? Take a shot. Yeah, part of it is because they were hungry. Was there a bigger reason? In John 6, Jesus fed the 5,000. You know what they did after he fed them? They followed. When you follow, we follow food, don't we? Free food? Sign me up. Right? And then he started talking to them about eating my flesh, drinking my blood. You know what most of them did after that? Took off. Was Jesus really thirsty and that's why he went to the well? Or did he want to talk to that woman? That's right. So you're meeting needs in order to gain an ear. It's not like we're using people. We really want to help people. But helping people can't be the end goal. Jesus didn't even perform miracles just to help people. He performed miracles so people would believe what he was saying. And that's why John uses those seven signs so that you might believe, he says toward the end of that book in John chapter 20. And so then we think, well, what am I doing to help people so that they might really know how interested I am in them and they'll find out I'm not just interested in their physical well-being, but I'm interested in their spiritual well-being. And it doesn't just have to be poor people. There are people in hospitals in nursing homes. I know people who have converted entire families because they went and stayed with somebody and held their hand or talked to them on regular visits at the nursing home when none of the family could get there. And the family couldn't believe that a stranger would go and visit their loved one in a nursing home that they couldn't get to often. And they ended up wondering, what would make somebody do that? That led to conversations, and most of that family converted to Christ. See how it works? So then, because our time is gone, I'll leave you with this. And this, of course, I'm not going to check back up on you, but when you read verses 9 through 21, the rest of this chapter, this tells you how to live as a Christian. We want to take the gifts, we want to use them, and so there are lots of different things in here as far as, like we talked about, the energy and so forth. Look at verse 11, not lagging in diligence, fervent in spirit, serving the Lord. Now, that looks different for some people. If you're mouthy like I am, then you hear me a lot and you see me a lot. And I can be, some of you are much more quiet. You're not going to ever see Graham act the way I do. But that doesn't mean Graham doesn't have a passion for the Lord. It just presents in a different way. But I have to ask myself, is that me? Am I somebody who is fervent in spirit? I'm going to have to remember to bless those that persecute me. And don't curse them in verse 14. I'm going to have to learn how to not retaliate or take it personally when I'm rejected. Or when my brethren and I disagree. Because we think we should do it this way. They think they should do it that way. I could go on and on. I'm trying to condense all this. And finally, you can pair this with 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And see there how the body should fit together and work together. And it will help. And I have high hopes. So I don't want you to think at all I came here and asked these pointed questions to pick on you or because of any negative thoughts I had. I love you brethren here. And I have high hopes. I hear the things that you already are doing, the things that you're about to start doing. And you can make a real difference in this community. And my prayers are with you. Anything else before we're done? All right, y'all pray for me after I talk to Mom like that.